Welcome to episode 10 of the Transforma Tu Inglés Profesional podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Smith. Today, I will be talking with Alistair, an amazing coach from my team, all about why small talk is so important, why many people find small talk more difficult than a business meeting, why questions are the secret to success with small talk and social English in general, some simple question structures that can help when you feel stuck, and the difference between direct and indirect questions. This podcast is aimed at helping you push your business English communication skills to the next level so that you can grow professionally and achieve your international career goals. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. Enjoy. Hi there, Alistair. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. And so today we thought that maybe we'd talk a little bit about the word fancy, which we mentioned a few episodes back, but in particular related to the idea of a question that we also mentioned, which was something like, do you fancy a break or do you fancy a coffee? Now, we thought of this particular question and it's kind of very much related to the idea of social English, right? It's a kind of something that is important when you are outside the meeting. And it's something that is also related to the whole idea of small talk, right? So I don't know whether you've had that experience with your particular clients that they've mentioned that they kind of feel less comfortable outside a meeting than actually in the meeting.
Yeah, quite often they say, well, I'm quite confident in the business setting, in a professional setting, because I prepared for it before. It's stuff I talk about every day in my job. So you have the technical vocabulary of your particular area in your work. So in fact, with the formal English or the business English, many of our clients are quite comfortable. It depends. But they say what they're really scared about or what makes them nervous is having to then talk to the... So obviously they could have a visitor coming from another office or from another company for a meeting, and you have to then go for the coffee break or maybe even socialize in the evening, because if they're staying overnight in the city, you probably have to go out for dinner with them or lunch. And they say, oh, the worst is that when I have to actually make what we call small talk, which is basically talking about non-important things. So about the family or sport, football or the weather, these kind of things is small talk. So making sort of conversation with people, no?
Yeah.
Socially. And they say, oh, I'm terrified of having to go to dinner or to the coffee break. I don't know what to say. I'm scared they're going to ask me something and I don't know how to respond. Because maybe you have your business vocabulary, you know very well, you're very confident with, but you don't know too well about having to talk about the weather. Or a football match, or
that's right, exactly right. Yeah, it's one of those things that can be quite tricky. It's not really self-evident that you would be able to deal with those sort of situations, right? And you know, it's important. And
it's also unexpected.
Too.
You don't know what's coming, so you don't know what they're going to ask you.
That's right.
Because in the meeting, you probably have it planned and pre-prepared and. You know, more or less the content of the meeting and what you have to talk about. No?
Yeah. And so if we kind of go back to that whole idea of, I mean, the actual expression small talk is kind of interesting in itself, right? Some of our listeners may not know that particular expression, but it's something that is, native speakers often refer to the whole idea of small talk, right? It's as you said, it could be in a lift or it could be, there are different types of small talk, I suppose, as well. And that's kind of important to say, right? There can be the kind of very, very sort of limited where you have to just use one of two sentences. Maybe you're in the lift with somebody, right? Mm. And you have to come up with a nice question to ask somebody something small. Whereas
it can also be much more elaborate. It can be literally that you have to take somebody around the city, your city, and you have to spend a few hours with them. And then, of course, that is a completely different sort of situation. And of course, you know, you need to be really well prepared for both of those, right? And yeah. in many situations, you have to think about the types of questions that you might ask that individual to really keep the conversation going, basically.
Well, that can be difficult. I think that's what worries people is they don't know this person very well or not at all. They could have met them for the first time and they're like, oh my God, what do I say to them? I've got to try to think of things to say and maintain keeping the conversation going through a lunch or a dinner or taking them out to see something in the city. So the coffee break, well, maybe it's 5 minutes and it's not too bad.
Yeah.
But something longer. So we say small talk, but it could be, you know, it could be big talk.
It could be.
It could be a long conversation over dinner. The problem that when you say small talk, it's about non-important. You're not talking about life or death or big issues or the war in discussing the war in Ukraine is not small talk. It's serious. No. So it's non-serious things, no?
Yeah.
So you say, you know, about the football match last night or the weather or how was somebody's family or this kind of how was your holiday?
Yeah.
So sort of informal chat.
That's right. I mean, it's kind of interesting there because obviously if you are going to be with somebody for the whole evening, then those types of questions do run out after a while. And then it's kind of, you do have to.
What do I say next?
Yeah. And you do have to go on to other things, right? And then maybe more interesting topics, or you have to kind of adapt to whatever they've mentioned to you and go down a particular route that they kind of given you a bit of information about, like whether if maybe they've told you something about their family and you kind of have to start asking questions about their all that.
Exactly. You know? They give you the topic and then you need to keep asking more questions to show interest also, not just say, okay, and stop and then silence.
Absolutely.
And of course they would expect you to offer information about yourself as well.
So
if you ask them about their family and they give you some information, they probably, even if they don't ask you, they would probably, you know, in a normal conversation, it's a, you know, an interchange of ideas. No? So they probably expect you to offer something about their, I've got two kids.
Hi there, just a very quick interruption. Hopefully you're able to understand everything in this episode, but if you need a little extra help, then you can download the transcript totally free and read along as we speak. If you're interested, just go to the show notes and find the link. Now let's get back to the show.
Girl and a boy aged, you know, so it's an exchange of information. You have to try to keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
And not just say, not sort of short and, you know, yes, no.
Yes, that's true as well. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's kind of really useful to think about how we maybe would feel about that in a Spanish situation. You know, I think that, you know, when we would be in a social situation and you're speaking with somebody in Spanish and you have to keep that conversation going, you do really actively have to think about it. I've been in many situations where I think, okay, what is my next question going to be? You know,
exactly.
And that is very important. It's something that takes a lot of effort. And I think that comes to the whole idea of obviously relationship building. Relationship building is very, very important in business in general.
Very important, yeah.
It's, you know, that essential, relationship. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Whether it's a colleague from another office or another country, that type of relationship building is really important. But it can be also with your boss, for example. I mean, your boss might come and visit you from another country as well, right? These days, business is so international. And of course, that is going to be really important in terms of relationship building there as well. Mm-hmm. So it's in that way, and in terms of also taking the conversation and moving the conversation and having it as making it as fluid as possible, the whole idea of question formulation is absolutely vital there, right?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, you've got to be able to think, well, the topics, well, having good vocabulary as well. So it's quite important to study things you might not think are so important because you're thinking, business English, I need to know about, you know, technical things and business terminology, which is also important, obviously.
Yeah.
But then, you know, just having a reasonably good vocabulary of things, topics like the weather, sport, the family, traveling is good, because if you don't have the vocabulary, even if you can maybe you could ask the question, but you've also got to be able to answer questions on various topics. But question formation is also important. How do you ask that question correctly?
Exactly.
To then initiate a conversation and get a response. But then you obviously you're going to have to answer questions on those same topics.
Yeah.
So building up a good vocabulary or a quite, you know, reasonable vocabulary on those kinds of informal subject, everyday subjects that people talk about. No?
Yeah.
It's very usual. And you think, well, that's not a business thing, but it is. It's also important in a business setting for relationship building, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that I've noticed, especially when I've spoken to my clients, is that they often feel that they are lacking vocabulary in that specific area. And they find that extremely difficult. You know, it's exactly what you're saying, is that they have to, you know, they kind of sort of realize that they are lacking that vocabulary when they're already in that situation. And then
it's too late.
It's too late. It's like, oh, yeah, no. It's too late. Yes. Yeah.
I don't have any words about the weather except, you know, one or two obvious ones.
That's right. That's right.
Or talking about a football match or any things like this.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is really useful even in business environments, in your business English, not just to focus on the obvious side of the technical things. And often it's true in classes with students in the past, or even though it's a business English class and that is the focus of the class and the reason the people are studying English or wanting to improve is because of their jobs, no, and they need it.
Yeah.
But very often they'll say, well, actually, I don't have too much. I say, do you want to do technical things about your job, IT or human resources or whatever it is they're working in?
Yeah.
And I say, well, not particularly. Actually, I control, you know, I have that language. I know I use it every day in my emails, in meetings, and it's the other stuff, just general, you know, to maintain a conversation about other vocabulary about non-business things. That is, they can get very stressed, and it's a very stressful situation. No, you're somebody you don't know very well.
Yeah,
you know, and you have got to chat about non-business related topics in the lift, the elevator.
Yeah,
in the coffee break, in the dinner.
That's right.
I mean, you get people coming to meetings, staying a week, you know, 3 or 4 days, and you've got meetings with them every day.
Yeah,
and every evening you've got to go out with that group of people visiting from another company or your company, but coming from a different country.
Yeah.
From the head office in London or the head office in, there may not be native speakers as well. You know, often there are other non-native speakers coming from France or Italy, or a mixture is the more typical thing. Now, an international meeting, you got people from England, maybe USA, but you got people from Italy, from France, from Germany, all mixing together, and you're all going out in the evening for dinner. You've got to spend 2 or 3, 4 hours with these people you don't really know in a non-business environment. But as you said before, you've got to make those people feel comfortable and build relationships with them because they're your colleagues. No?
Yeah.
And if you sit there in silence through the whole dinner, not you're too scared to speak to anyone, or it doesn't give a good impression.
No.
So you're not going to enjoy the experience either.
No, that's
exactly terrified right. If someone's going to ask me a question, I have to answer. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know how to talk about non-business subjects. No?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that whole idea of stress as well, because, you know, when you go into that situation, you can imagine that it is a stressful thing, especially if it lasts for more than a few hours, right? But it's interesting that level of stress that you might have also is kind of very counterproductive to your particular performance, right? So the more stressed you are, it's kind of like really has an impact on your ability to perform in those situations. So if you're kind of very worried about the situation, and this is kind of the same, I suppose, with anything, right? It could be a presentation or something a little bit more formal in a business context as well. Generally, that whole idea of the more stressed you are, the less that you're going to be able to enjoy. Yeah, the less fluent you are, that's for sure.
Yeah, you need to feel comfortable, relaxed.
You need to feel comfortable, yes, absolutely.
And then you're more able to have these kind of pleasant, nice, informal, quite bad, funny conversations with people.
Yes.
There needs to be in a relaxed environment and you feel relaxed and confident. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think that kind of, if you are relaxed and if you are confident, then that kind of can be transmitted to that other person. You know, it's obvious that you feel that way and that you're enjoying the experience. And then it's more likely that the other person is going to enjoy that experience too, right? So it's kind of all about preparation, and it's all about vocabulary, your range of vocabulary, and making sure that you have that vocabulary. But it's also, as we mentioned before, the whole idea of question formulation. And we did, you know, before we came on on today, we did kind of cover a few potential very simple questions, right, that you could ask, you know, a colleague or whoever's visiting you, just to kind of get the conversation going. And obviously those topics are like the weather, sport, family, and of course those particular questions are very simple questions, so things like how's the weather or how was your trip, how was the flight, you know. So basically it's always going to have that, you know, that type of construction, which is like how was this, or how, which kind of just gets the conversation started, right?
Or did you have a good flight?
Yeah, you can use a past simple. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
to start with an auxiliary. So yeah, you need to know how to use your auxiliaries to make questions or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a question with the verb to be. You don't need do or did. If it's a past simple question, you need did you have a good flight?
Yeah.
Where you say, how was your flight? So you have alternatives, but you have to obviously formulate those questions correctly, you know, grammatically correctly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking before, when we were talking about the more relaxed environment, maybe when you go for dinner in the evenings or lunch with the client or the colleagues, I was thinking that I think one thing to say about being right is don't be too worried about being correct. Mm. Obviously, the more grammatically correctly you can speak, the better.
Yeah.
Always. But I think once you get into that environment, okay, when you're in your meeting and you're giving your presentation, you maybe have to be more careful about how you speak and try to speak as correctly as possible.
Yeah.
Once you're socializing with your colleagues or with visitors from other companies, it's a more relaxed environment. The thing is not to get too stressed about, you know, oh, what will they think of my English? Or if I make a mistake, it's embarrassing. Like, as you say in Spanish, vergüenza, no?
Yeah.
People have too much vergüenza. They're ashamed or embarrassed.
Yeah.
But, you know, nobody worries in those environments, especially if they're other non-native speakers.
Yeah.
Probably everyone is feeling equally as nervous, or they're going to make similar mistakes or not even recognize you make a mistake. And even native speakers really are not concentrating. They're not English teachers. They're not analyzing everything you're saying. So basically, as long as you can make yourself, it's more important to be fluent, relaxed, just speak and make conversation as best as you can. And if you make some grammatical mistakes, people are either not even going to notice or nobody cares. But if you sit there nervous and anxious about, oh, I can't speak, I'm too worried about making a mistake, and you don't speak, that comes across far, it's like unfriendly, no?
Yes.
You're not interested in the other people. Or people ask you a question, you just say, yes. Because you're terrified of, you know, saying too much and making mistakes. So I think in that environment, don't worry too much about mistakes. So question formulation, it's important, and you need to know how to make questions, ask questions, and as correctly as possible, which is what we're just talking about. But sometimes don't worry too much. Once you get into a more relaxed social environment, speak, make conversation, enjoy, and have a few beers. That helps. Definitely.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. Without a doubt. Yeah. No, that is true. Without a doubt. I couldn't agree more with that. There's the more you can almost forget about the idea of being perfect, and that whole idea of perfectionism doesn't really help at all in that context. And there are lots of clients do have this sort of perfectionist profile, and that doesn't really help. So you should try to be a little bit more relaxed on yourself, or a little bit more forgiving. Without a doubt, that is a good approach. And even, for example, that you if you notice that you make a mistake or whatever, there is many options in terms of making it into either something a little bit amusing, like, for example, say, oh, I didn't know that, or oh, so what does that word mean? Or if they correct you and you say, oh, really, you know, like it's just not to feel too
don't feel too nervous about it, or
that's right,
paranoid, or
it's just it may be easy for us to say, but at the same time, obviously we do have the same sort of situations when we speak in Spanish. So
make mistakes all the time, especially at the beginning, but even now.
So,
and generally people won't correct you.
That's true. Yeah.
In the end, I always say to my students, finally, a language is to communicate. That's what it's for. That's its function. And if you can communicate your ideas, people understand you and you can understand them.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. Now, obviously, you have to try your best to speak a language as well as you can, as grammatically correctly as you can.
Yeah.
But finally, it's not necessarily the most important thing.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. It's more about kind of like enjoying the process if you can. If you can enjoy that process, then you're kind of
use the language and enjoy it and speak it. And
yeah.
it's a great experience when you can have a conversation with someone in another language and maintain it.
Yeah.
Is a nice feeling. No, I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, there you've got some kind of very simple questions, obviously, which is how is the weather? How is your family? But we were also thinking about another construction, right? Which is where you place the kind of, you have a situation where you say something like, what is the weather like? Okay. Yeah. What is the weather at the moment in, I don't know, wherever the person has come from, right?
In your country or in your city.
Yeah. And that's a kind of a different type of construction of a question, which is just slightly different, but can be also useful, right?
Yeah. Well, native speakers use that a lot, perhaps more than how, though we do use that. How's the hotel? How was the flight? How's the family? But very often we use like with the verb to be. Now, obviously, like generally is, do you like chocolate? Do you like football? Do you like eating pizza? Hmm. So it's like gustar in Spanish, no? Te gusta.
Yeah.
But if you put it with the verb to be, it has a completely different meaning. Say, what's your hotel like? Or what's the food like in your country? What's the weather like? Yeah. You're not asking someone if they like the hotel or the weather. You're asking them to describe the weather or the food. So if you've never eaten Japanese food, you say, what's the food like in Japan?
That's right.
I'm asking you to describe the type of food people eat in Japan. Say, well, they eat sushi, which is raw fish and rice. So it doesn't mean you like sushi. I'm not asking you, do you like Japanese? So it's two questions. Do you like Japanese food?
Uh-huh.
Or you put do.
Yeah.
And that's like, te gusta, no? But if you say, what's Japanese food like? I'm asking you to explain to me and describe Japanese food.
That's right.
So the meaning of like is completely different in that phrase with to be.
Yeah. And it's a nice one as well in terms of the whole idea of, you know, relationship building, right? And the obviously the questions that we were talking about before, like how's the weather, is similar. And they are both what we would describe as open questions, right? Which is the kind of thing that you always want to focus on, open questions rather than closed questions, because otherwise the conversation will never really flow.
Very short.
Right?
Yes, no.
Yes, no, but is not really the way that you want to go. But both of those types of constructions, obviously the first one being very, very simple, but the second one is a more type of a native type of a question construction or construction of a question. And I think that that's something that, you know, will allow the individual that you're talking to really give you a lot more information. You know, they suddenly you, and then you can, once they've given that information, you can take part of take a bit of that information that they've told you about and then go with that particular topic, right? And so that's, these types of open questions are super useful, I would say, in terms of like really building that relationship that you're so keen on constructing, let's say, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you need the ability to ask the question, how to ask the question, to provoke or begin the conversation. And then, as we said before, you need the vocabulary to be able to talk about that topic. So, you know, people also need to study vocabulary of, you know, food and weather and things like this that maybe they don't think are so well, obviously when you're traveling and in your personal life, you need this vocabulary. So it's important, but you may sometimes think it's not that important for my business, for my job or in a business environment, but it is, because you are going to have to make small talk, as we said before, or have polite conversation, informal conversations with people coming to visit your office, colleagues, because you have coffee breaks, lunches, dinners, as we said before. So it's not only sitting in meetings, giving presentations and only talking about business. There's a wider environment in your job that is important.
Yeah.
So it's good to study these things, try to, you know, expand your vocabulary on those, what you could call social topics or day-to-day topics of normal life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting also, because I think a lot of people actually say that, you know, the formal setting of the office is kind of maybe where you exchange information, but is actually in the social situations where you actually get to know the person and kind of trust the person is actually where maybe more business deals are actually done.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, true. Yeah. And building trust is important.
Building trust is the key element. So if you have, let's say, a feeling or that you feel that you're limited in that way, then yeah, try to prepare yourself. And of course, anything related to culture can also be quite nice, right? Mm. I mean, it's kind of, you're trying to maybe learn about their culture, telling them about your culture. That is always really useful. So, you know, whichever sort of topics that you that you think that you could potentially engage with this in terms of with this person, mm. then they're kind of definitely worth, yeah, looking,
exploring,
look, yeah, exploring, yeah, just before you kind of get to that situation, so that you're a little bit prepared, that without a doubt,
yeah, because they're probably going to ask you about the typical food in your country, and you have to explain
exactly
the typical dishes.
That's right.
For example, or yeah, cultural habits that people have.
Exactly.
And you want to ask them. So it's also, you need to be reciprocal in these things. When people ask you questions because they're interested in your family or what football team you support, or asking you about the culture in your country, the food, you also need to keep that conversation going and show interest. You ask them also, oh, and in Germany, what sort of things do you eat there? Or so you need to, you know, be reciprocal when they've asked you and you've explained, ask them the same question or a similar question, no, to elicit. Yeah. To keep that conversation going and showing an interest in their life or their country or culture.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, all of these questions that we're talking about here are what we would describe as direct questions, right? But of course, there are also indirect questions, but I don't know whether we want to open that can of worms, do we? I'm not sure.
The can of worms, we used that expression in a previous podcast, I remember. And I said, oh, well, we'll need to explore that in another podcast, which we, well, now we can, no? So you just used it again.
Yeah.
So what does it mean, Daniel, when you say opening a can of worms? Is not literally opening a can or a tin containing worms. I hope not. That would be quite disgusting. What does it refer to?
Well, yeah, I mean, basically it's the whole idea of a subject that may require a lot of detail to talk about, right? So imagine in this particular case, we're obviously talking about the idea of indirect questions, and indirect questions, we would need to explain quite a lot of different issues related to indirect questions. And therefore, we kind of don't want to open that can of worms because we really don't have time in this particular episode. But of course, it doesn't have to be necessarily related to this particular thing that we're talking about now, obviously, which is indirect questions, but it can be something else that if we start talking about it, it's going to take quite a long time.
Yeah, to long kind of, and complicated and needs a big explanation. And
that's right.
Either you don't want to do it, it's not the moment, or you haven't got time. So, oh, yeah. You're opening a can of worms there. So it's like, it's going to be a complicated conversation in some way. No worry, require time to that's explain right. something.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like, that's why I think I used it in the first podcast or the second, I don't remember.
Sure.
That we were near the end of the podcast. We had about 2 minutes left and I suddenly started talking about a different subject. I said, oh, well, no, that's opening another can of worms. Maybe better leave it till another podcast because we haven't got time to go into that because it's quite something quite complicated. No?
Yeah. Exactly. So that's the basic idea. Yeah, that's the basic idea of it. And it's kind of a useful way of saying to someone that you kind of maybe also, yeah, don't want to have that conversation at that particular time, let's say. You know, it's like, it's something
well, it could
that
be something
you,
unpleasant, not necessarily just because it's time-consuming.
Yes,
or
that's true.
It's like, better don't open that can of worms. So it's a subject matter that is going to be delicate.
That's true.
So you prefer not to speak about it, at least at the moment in this particular environment, no?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's got, yeah, the two senses, no? It's like, that's going too far. It's too much. We don't want to talk about this now. Either because it just takes too long and it's a bit complicated. So it's not the appropriate moment. And it could be because of personal things like, oh, no, maybe this is not the time or place to discuss that particular topic.
Yeah.
Because it could be a little complicated in the sense of delicate.
Yes. Or controversial.
Or controversial. Yeah.
Yeah.
Controversial topic that you say, okay, now let's save that for another day or another moment. This is not the moment.
Yeah.
Let's not open that can of worms.
Now, in this particular case, indirect questions are not necessarily very controversial.
But time consuming.
But time consuming, yeah. So, but that particular expression has all of those specific sort of connections, right? So, so it's important.
Because when you get to indirect questions, I think in this environment with the topic of today, the small talk, you're in a fairly relaxed environment with people you know or you more or less know. And so in the coffee break, the dinner, whatever it may be, you can ask fairly direct questions to people. It's not rude or impolite. Mm. But obviously, indirect questions are longer questions, more polite, that you may ask strangers, people you don't know, like in the street, where you need to ask for directions or where something is. Now, could you please tell me where the nearest cash machine is,
yeah,
for example. And these are longer questions, more polite, and they're called indirect questions. And obviously that opens up a whole topic of how you construct those sentences is a little bit more complicated and more difficult than short, direct questions.
Exactly.
That are relatively simple, no?
Yeah.
And it's to do with word order, which
won't
open opening a can of worms when you start getting into word order. So I think that's something we can save for another podcast and for another day.
For another day, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. So we'll definitely come back to that topic because it's really interesting. And it's actually one of those key mistakes, let's say. It's one of those
very, very common.
Very, very common.
And very easy to make.
Oh, yeah. So easy. So easy to make those mistakes. And but really powerful if you can get it right as well. So, I mean, it's
impressive.
It is impressive.
Yeah, someone manages to make a long indirect question in the correct word order, which we'll explain when we deal with it. It's like, oh, that's you're demonstrating you've got a really good level of English.
You do,
because it's so easy not to do it correctly. And
It
I mean, people understand you, so it's not a problem of communication. People will understand the question you're trying to ask, but it's just not correct and it sounds a little strange. So if you can get it correct, then it really can impress people with your level of English.
Yep. Absolutely. Great. Well, I think that's it for today in this terms of this episode. So thanks a lot, Alistair, for your time.
Thank you.
And we'll basically meet up again tomorrow. Well, next time, next week. All right.
Yeah. Cheers.
All right. Thanks a lot. See you then.